So Steve Marino, who is the creative director of A, B, and C Creative in Philadelphia, we want to talk to you about some of the Super Bowl ads, and we went in on some of these ads yesterday, some of the ones we liked, some of the ones we didn't. I want to certainly pick your brain on that. But before that, a lot was made about how much it costs for a 30-second spot. It was something like $4.5 million, but you do this for a living. So that's not the only cost. How much does it cost to actually create a Super Bowl ad from conceptualizing it to hiring actors, potentially celebrities if you're doing a Super Bowl? I mean, that's not the end bottom line, $4.5 million. How much is it really costing these brands to come up with a Super Bowl ad?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's kind of like asking how much a car costs. Well, it depends on the car. So, you know, you have some of these spots where, you know, you have celebrities in there, and they're going to cost you, and it's multiple day shoots. So you're looking easily into the upper six figures, or even into, you know, some of these spots, probably that Budweiser spot probably cost, you know, over $1 million for sure. So, yeah, once it really starts racking up. You know, you do have these clients that have been doing this for quite some time, and they probably purchased, you know, 10 years, 20 years of advertising time through Super Bowl. So Budweiser isn't paying $4.5 million, which is what everybody else is, but it still costs a darn lot of money.
Sure. Steve, I want to ask you, just being a creative director and trying to get new ideas and filter those out and say, these are good ideas, these are not, can you tell us a little bit about how you run that process and maybe how that compares to how some of these other firms are doing things, to the point where you have an idea, say, all right, this dog getting chased by a wolf and these Clydesdales is a good idea. This dead kid thing is a good idea. Like, how do you personally, how do you sort that out, and how do you decide which ideas are good and which aren't?
So one of my first mantras is the dead kid thing is rarely a good idea. It's right on the top of my wall. No, I mean, I think there's a difference between coming up with an ad and coming up with a Super Bowl ad. So their approach to it is very different from the get-go. Most of the time in advertising, you're trying to convey some sort of message. There's an announcement to make. There's a new product or something. It's newer. It's faster. We want you to glean some sort of information from us. And then we sprinkle a little bit of entertainment to kind of help you digest it. Super Bowl ads are the exact opposite of that, right? There's very little information I want you to know. I just need to entertain you. So I think their approach to this is, what's the biggest draw? What's the biggest entertainment value? What's the coolest thing that we could possibly show? Because, you know, you look at these, half of them don't even have content. There's no, you know, they're not saying anything. They're not making you, you know, read anything. It's not a $9.95 type of offer. It's like, look at this lost puppy. I feel so good. So I think when they were going about this creative, they probably had, you know, they've been thinking about this for months and months and months, by the way. And so they probably had walls and walls and walls of ideas, and stuff started just trickling to the top, and they would definitely have tested quite a few different spots to see which one tested the best amongst consumers, which ones, you know, had the highest favorability scores. And then that's the one that actually went into production. So it's not your typical, hey, we have a new campaign, let's get together and we'll kick up some ideas, and this concept's good enough. It's no, this has to be Super Bowl-worthy type advertising.
We're talking with Steve Marino, the creative director from A, B, and C Advertising. And at one point you said from the get-go, and I thought you said from the get-go, which led me to this question. Because if you look at what Geico has done over the years, and I don't know if they even had any ads in this Super Bowl, but they've had in the past, where they do multiple ad campaigns simultaneously. If you hate the cavemen, but you like the gecko, then you might do, you know, you might still want to hire them or use their product or whatever it is. This happened with Nationwide. Josh made a joke about the dead kid. The dead kid ad is one of the worst ads in the history of the Super Bowl, and they said it was a conversation starter. And yet I thought one of the best ads was the Invisible Mindy ad. I really enjoyed that. There was a third ad, which is somewhere in the middle. I forget what it was. So why would a company spend that much more money and sort of split the bit, have a funny ad, but also have a really, really serious ad? So if people are offended by one, they like the other. It seems to be confusing, but there's logic to it. It's obviously worked for companies like Geico in the past.
Yeah, it's kind of a head scratcher. I mean, the whole reason why Geico has to do that is because they just spend so much darn money. So that, you know, they spend hundreds of millions of dollars just in their ad buy. So if they had just one particular spokesperson or guy, you would be so tired of this guy. It would just be ad fatigue. So they literally have to have multiple campaigns running at the same time. And it's just a byproduct of the amount of media volume that they're buying. The nationwide thing is a little bit of a head-scratcher, though, because that campaign that they've been running with Julia Roberts, by the way, is the VO in that Dead Kid spot, if you listen to it,
which is kind of crazy.
So the fact that they needed to run that, this whole idea of, oh, it's a conversation starter, this is all damage control. You know, they actually thought, I'm sure at the time, that spot was really going to cut through the clutter when you have a bunch of puppies and dogs, and, you know, that we're going to take a serious tone and people are going to stop what they're doing and they're going to watch this, and this is going to change and affect behavior. The problem was, is the temperament and the mood and the tone of that spot is just the antithesis of what's going on at the Super Bowl parties. You're in there with your friends and you have your kids and you're eating chips and nachos and you want to have a good time, you want to be entertained, and all of a sudden this subject material comes up and you're like, oh my gosh, this is... my kids are around here. I don't want them. But, you know, Daddy, why is that tub overflowing? It's like, don't look. Don't look out your eyes. So I just don't understand. I think that whole idea of, like, of, you know, we're trying to do, you know, we need to have multiple campaigns running, and we're trying to do a conversation start, that's pure damage control at this point. I'm sure that there are people at Nationwide right now that are probably filling out, getting their resumes up to date, because they're not having a good time at work this week.
Steve, I want to ask you about sort of the mood and how some of the other, you know, issues that were addressed in ads, the domestic violence thing and the throw like a girl issue. But let me ask you first, is there a point of no return with some of these ads? Could people have Nationwide looked at that Dead Kid ad and said, like, wow, this thing really sucks, but we spent a ton of money on this. Maybe we should just throw it in there anyway. When you get that far in the process and you realize you've got a lemon on your hands, what do you do? And did they realize that they had a lemon on their hands?
GoDaddy, frankly, GoDaddy did, because they tested their ad and got lampooned with the dog in the box, and then they just put out some nonsense with a guy drawing on a picture and having a voiceover done. So, I mean, Steve, you speak better to that, but does this happen a lot where you get an ad at the final product and you're like, oh, what do we do here?
Well, if it does happen, you haven't done enough research and enough forethought going into it. I mean, my thought on the GoDaddy thing is that there is a distinct possibility that was all manufactured, that entire thing. You know, there's no reason why. One of the first time I saw that ad, I saw it online, and I saw it with the, oh, people are so upset about this ad. It wasn't a, hey, take a look at a preview at our ad, and then it was upset. It was announced that there was all this uproar. So there's a distinct possibility that they kind of leaked that and did a lot of that. Let's do an ad that people are talking about 4 days before running up to the Super Bowl before they even see our ad. GoDaddy has done this stuff with controversy, and let's have, you know, awkward teenagers making out with supermodels. That's kind of been their MO for the past couple of years. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was all a fix. The entire time. It's definitely within the realm of possibility. What do I know? But the people are saying it. The other thing is, once you've gone to pass this point of no return, I'm sure that the marketing people at Nationwide are probably able to show some research saying, look, that we tested this ad and it had a lot of recall. And so maybe the emotion isn't right and they didn't like it, but boy, they remembered it. And they probably use that as saying, okay, you know what, I guess we'll run with it. People will be talking about this ad, and that's great. But if they're talking about it in a way like, I don't want to have anything to do with Nationwide, that's not a good way.
We're talking with Steve Marino, creative director of AB&C Advertising. And so I want to ask you this. When we talk about food stuff, you know, if you're a chef, you look at food differently when you go to a restaurant. You being in the industry, and I try to look at things the same way. I mean, we joked around about sort of doing stuff. So I hated the Clydesdale. I felt it was manipulative. Like, horses aren't heroes. Firemen are heroes. Police are heroes. Military are heroes. Horses are horses. And yet somehow we've allowed Budweiser over the years to turn these, to personify these horses and have them do basically human things. So I hated that ad, and yet it was number one on the USA Today ad meter. How much stake do advertising executives like yourself and creative people put into these ad meters? If that's the number one ad, or if the Fiat ad with the wiener pills, if that's number three on the list, how much do you look at that and say, okay, this is what people are liking now, we're going to have to tailor our next project to that?
I think we really need to do a lot of research and finding out, what's the guy's problem who's in charge of watching these horses and watching these dogs for Budweiser? Because every year one of them gets lost or one of them gets out of the cage. I mean, what is this guy's problem? I couldn't agree more with you. When I saw the Budweiser stuff, I'm like, this is the same spot. I mean, they're just swapping out animals. Like, I was just waiting for the baby to crawl out of the hay and be like, oh. So I think it's getting tired. but also at the same time, they are looking at these ad meters. It's hard for them to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think I remember seeing the marketing manager from Budweiser literally saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So they're kind of going to run this out until finally there's enough of that fatigue where they're going to say they have to change it up. Because I'm with you. I just thought that it was really expected and it was boring. And I thought there were much better spots out there that were really emotional, like the Microsoft stuff. You know, the little kid with the legs, you know, kind of getting back on his feet. So to speak. Yeah. I thought that was a really, really impactful ad. And you know, Toyota's trying to do it too, with you know, the dad's crying and stuff. Always kind of cuts through the clutter a little bit. So. But I agree with you. I think that it's getting played out, and I wouldn't be surprised if maybe even next year, you know, they change it, or at least maybe focus on another animal that the guy can lose.
Steve Marino is the creative director at AB&C Advertising, and he is joining us now live on the Dish Hopper Hotline. Steve, Dan and I talked before the show about the fact that the Super Bowl is like the one game where a lot of women are actually watching, tuned in, sitting with their husbands or at parties or whatever. And we saw a lot of dad-centric ads, which I thought sort of flew in the face of that logic. What did you think about the onslaught of dad-vertising? You mentioned it with the Toyota ad. What do you think about that when you have all these other issues with the domestic violence and everything else? Where did the dad surge come from in your mind?
Yeah, the advertising. I love it.
feel free to steal that, by the way.
Yeah, I think that's a byproduct of the market kind of course correcting. You look at these companies like Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson. These guys spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars marketing to the American consumer. When you look at the American consumer, they're primarily women. They buy the products for themselves. They buy the products for the household. 50% of male deodorant purchases are made by women. So they look at that and they say, you know what, let's target women. And so they had gone out there, and for years they have been doing it. If you remember the Olympic ads, you know, it was Procter & Gamble was the official sponsor of Mom. So they really went at this. But then when you take a look at the market, you say, okay, you know, so if 75% of the people buying stuff are women, 25% of the American purchasing market is a big market. So they look at that and they say, well, how can we approach these dads? And what doesn't work for dads is when they show dad being kind of a big kid. He's incompetent. He's a goof. And so, you know, they test that stuff and it doesn't test well. So they've kind of course corrected, say, you know, let's not show dad as an idiot. Let's show dad, you know, there's more single-family households, you know, a lot of people living in divorce. Dads do a lot of the work, too. And so I think that they've course-corrected this whole momvertising. It doesn't sound as good as dadvertising.
No.
But, and it really shifted towards this this dadvertising thing. And I think when you watch these, you know, that's something that tests well for both men and women. I thought the mom spots were great, so I think the dad spots are great.
I want to sort of stay on that because, obviously, the NFL has been in the news for the domestic violence conversation that we're having throughout the season, and the No More ads. The one that ran during the Super Bowl where the woman was ordering pizza and you see just sort of a beaten up house and no people in it, and it was just a voiceover, was a powerful ad. And it was a very different tone from the No More ads that happened throughout the playoffs and certainly during the season, where there was actors fake crying and coughing and like, this is a tough conversation to have. As someone who does this for a living, as an executive in advertising, what were your thoughts on the original, you know, white background No More ads? And do you think if you didn't like them like me, that they were able to sort of fix it in a way with what they did during the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think it's a really great point, Dan. What the first round of that creative did was it kind of cut through. It's awkward to watch someone full screen on your 50-inch TV just kind of staring right into the screen and not saying anything. So it does get your attention, but at the same time, it's like, I kind of don't want to see Chris Carter like half crying for 28 seconds. And so for me, it didn't work as well. I thought the spot, the domestic violence spot that ran, was amazingly powerful. There was so much going on in that story. For me, the trick was, and I've seen this in a lot of stuff that actually ended up testing better, is that you needed to be able to hear what was happening in that spot in addition to just seeing it. And if you're like me, you know, when you're watching the Super Bowl, you're in a crowded living room that has 20 people and there's kids running around and everybody's talking. What works best, and if you take a look at the ad meter, the stuff that tested the best was the stuff that you could have watched it with the sound off and felt really, really good about it. You know, the lost dog and a car eating a wiener pill, as you called it. You know, that stuff tests really well. You need to be able to listen to what's happening in that domestic violence spot to really understand, wow, this is a really, really powerful story. And I think that may be one of the reasons why it just kind of didn't test as well. But I thought it was a lot more on strategy with the real situation. That's a real situation of domestic violence. You know, Chris Carter choking up over it, that's kind of... we're kind of glossing it over. We're putting, you know, the superstar perspective on domestic violence. That was a real domestic violence spot that ran during the Super Bowl, and I thought it was amazingly powerful and really, really well done.
Steve, we are appreciating your look in terms of how the sausage is being made with some of these Super Bowl ads. I'm wondering if there was maybe an ad or two that you really enjoyed, maybe one that you wish, hey, I wish I would have thought of this idea. was there one that you saw at Super Bowl Sunday that maybe fits that criterion?
Yeah, I think the stuff that Snickers did, the Snickers Very Brady ad was definitely my favorite spot. And then one of the reasons why is, one, you know, anytime that you can get Buscemi and Machete in the same spot and feel like it's really integrated, you're doing something right. Yeah. But, you know, I think even more impressive is that Snickers has been doing that same campaign for years now.
Yeah.
And that felt completely fresh. It felt completely new, but it was also hilarious. I mean, you know, everybody knows that scenario, but you swap out a couple of different celebs in there, and it just takes on a totally, totally different tone. I thought that commercial was spot on. I thought the Skittles commercial was also great.
Oh, you like that?
Which is weird, of course. Like, I gravitate towards candies, apparently. but I also thought anytime I can see Walter White back in a commercial, I just thought that, you know, the whole room got really quiet. That's how I like to judge. I watch, you know, I kind of see a lot of this stuff as it's leaked out. So what I'll do is oftentimes I'll be reading the room when stuff runs, and so I'll try to see what really breaks through and gets people to basically shut up and just watch the commercial. And when that E. Sheeran spot ran with Walter White, everyone got really quiet and was like looking like, what's happening? Is there a new show? No, he's marketing E. Sheeran. So that one broke through. I thought the Brady one broke through. The Skittles, you know, with the everyone has that one huge arm for arm wrestling. That was just a weird commercial. And for me, weird, you know, the weird funny always plays a little bit better than the saccharine sweet, you know, Budweiser type stuff.
You just like your sweets in bar or bag form is what we're
doing. Well, exactly. Well, see, at the time I'm eating so many chips, I have so much salty, I need something to counteract. So I gravitate towards candy advertising.
Thank you so much, Steve, for taking the time today to break all the Super Bowl stuff down. And again, I will be calling you shortly.
Thanks, <man.
laughs> All right, Dan. We're looking for somebody like you.
Well, that's good to know.